We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
Saul, it was 2008 when you left the EDC, and the agency has been marked by a lot of instability since then. I have to get your general reaction to just this cycle of near chaos that's been engulfing the agency with a lack of a long-term leader and board members coming and going.
Yeah, it's been really sad to watch, you know, as a Rhode Islander and committed to the state, you know, and wanting to see it improve. You know, economic development, you know, takes long cycles. I mean, it's going to take 10 years to transform this economy. We're not talking about tweaks here. I mean, you know that. You know, we have to make major structural change in our economy. So we need clear leadership, and we need to align activities both in the public and private sector to that. You know, and we have not been able to achieve that. And I'm disappointed, you know, that we haven't had the leadership, you know, to make that happen and to use the downturn, you know, as a crisis that moves us forward in a much more significant way to make these changes. I mean, we haven't even restructured the EDC, you know, to give it a credible platform to move forward.
As you say, this high point of problems at the EDC has come at a time when Rhode Island has been bedeviled by one of the nation's highest rates of unemployment. Where do you put the explanation for why this has been the case?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the economy itself, you know, is not well positioned to withstand economic downturns. I mean, I always think economic development is about positioning the economy, you know, to be more resilient and to better withstand the storm for the next downturn. It's too late when you're in the downturn. This notion that Rhode Island is always the first in and the last out of every recession, this seems to be a narrative that Rhode Islanders just accept. I mean, I don't accept that. I mean, we have to change that narrative, but to do it is going to take a long-term vision and a commitment of a lot of players in order to move that forward, and I just don't see it.
What are Massachusetts and Connecticut doing that we haven't done? I look at Kendall Square 20 years ago. Look at Kendall Square today. It's a very vibrant place. Both Mass and Connecticut, I know that there's some differences geographically, and I understand that. But nonetheless, why is their unemployment rate lower, their educational rates of their workforce higher, and frankly, they're attracting more of the kind of 21st century business that everybody seems to say is the key to future economic growth?
Yes. Well, first of all, they made their economy more about innovation and entrepreneurship, right, than we did. If you look at their economy, about 60% of the jobs in Massachusetts are in sectors, you know, that are knowledge-based sectors. Mm-hmm. They allow people to come in at an entry level where there are job ladders and they can move up in order to earn enough money to be able to afford to live, you know, here in the Northeast. In Rhode Island, that number is closer to 40%. So when the downturn starts, right, most of our jobs are in lower wage service industries. These are the industries that get slammed during a recession and take longer to come out of the recession. Massachusetts' economy is more resilient. They made more of a commitment to education early on than we did. I like a lot of the work we're doing now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big supporter of the work that Commissioner Gist is doing to make sure that when we give someone a diploma, it's meaningful, and then doing what we need to do to ensure that we're going to have the workforce we need, you know, to do those jobs. But it is a tough and long haul to do.
Now, is it just inside the 495 and 128 belts? Because I look at New Bedford and Fall River, and I will tell you, I don't think they're doing any better than Woonsocket or West Warwick.
That's a great point. I come from Springfield, Massachusetts.
And they're not doing very well either.
Right. So we, you know, the Massachusetts miracle didn't make its way west, you know, all the way to Springfield. And if you look at Springfield compared to Providence, you know, and you drive around and you see what's happening, I mean, you'd pick Providence, you know, 99 out of 100 times.
Yeah, unless you're going to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, correct. So you're absolutely right. I mean, there are pockets of great success, you know, particularly in and around the Boston area and expanding out. There are some challenges just like the ones we face when you start to get out, you know, into the more rural and western areas.
But I mean, Providence is only 40 miles from Boston.
That's right.
The business-backed Rhode Island Public Expenditure Council last year made a pretty detailed plan for remaking the Economic Development Corporation, trying to raise the level of accountability for what happens with the economy here in Rhode Island. And Governor Chafee, who had asked for the report, has not really implemented any of those recommendations. What do you think the highlights are of RIPEC's findings? What do you think the state should do with them?
Well, I like some of them, not all of them. You know, and I'm getting tired of all the reports, as I'm sure a lot of Rhode Islanders
yes.
are. I mean, you could stack these things high, and now we're talking about doing more studying. I mean, it's time to act, you know, not to study these things. But the RIPEC report had some good pieces to it. The idea of, you know, creating a commerce secretary, I think, is a good one. I'd like to see tighter alignment between, you know, the person responsible for economic policy and programming be better aligned with the governor and General Assembly leadership. I don't like so much the overreach on consolidating, you know, multiple government agencies underneath that, like DEM. But the parts about hitting the reset button, you know, and being clearer about our economic development strategy are really good there.
You're a big person for innovation. You use that phrase a lot, and that's part of what you do at the Business Innovation Factory. How do you explain that to regular people, and how can the state do a better job of leveraging innovation?
Yeah, I mean, it's very simple. If you're small, you have no choice but to be good. If you're Rhode Island, if you think we're going to win this game by playing the same game everyone else is playing, you know, we're not. Our population is flat. You know, we're going to increase our economy by increasing the value that we create collectively. So innovation is about creating better products, better services, better ways to solve societal problems. And Rhode Island should be using its size as an advantage. If you look at Northern European and some Far Eastern countries, you know, you find small countries that have figured out if you're small, you better be good. You better be about innovation. We need to make that far more central to our economic vision.
It's always struck me as kind of an existential question. You know, Rhode Island is not even big enough to be a county, most west of the Hudson River, that's for sure. And secondly, look, it's a 17th century kind of political, organization. I'm wondering, are we just in an anachronism? In the 21st century, is Rhode Island actually, as a state, a viable economic entity?
I absolutely believe it is. I mean, we have 11 colleges and universities jammed into 1,000 square miles, right? We have the highest percentage per capita, you know, of post-secondary education and research. We have all the assets that we need in order to be an innovation economy.
Well, then how do we stop the kids from fleeing the day after they get their degree?
Well, I always talk about people like to lament the brain drain. I look at it the other way. We should be grateful that we have those brains here in the first place. Let's give them a reason to stay. Stop worrying about when they leave. They're going to leave. They're going to come back. If they have reasons to be here, we just need to make innovation and entrepreneurship more central to our vision. And then we need to get real specific about how we lead that from the public sector and how we work with private sector entities in order to do it.
Even though we're more than a year from the next governor's race, a lot of what we're hearing from elected officials now is kind of positioning leading up to that. And the message from Governor Chafee is that he's trying to build the economy the right way by focusing on education, infrastructure, workforce training, that kind of thing. What do you think of the governor's efforts on the economy?
Well, I think that, you know, working on those items, education and infrastructure, are really important. A lot of people talk about improving our business climate. We absolutely need to improve our business climate. It's necessary but not sufficient. There are a ton of great business climates around the country and around the world. If you want to be unique and you want to distinguish yourself, you have to figure out what you can be uniquely good at. And what we can be good at is leveraging our size and our rich heritage of colleges and universities to drive innovation and entrepreneurship.
Taxes are often mentioned, sometimes in the ideological realm. Governor Cicchetti sort of thought taxes were the be-all and end-all. If you lowered taxes for wealthy people, the economy would take off. But it seems to me people move to a place for jobs first and maybe taxes second. What's the balance here?
Well, it is a balance. I mean, clearly our cost structure is too high, therefore our tax structure is too high. We should have a more favorable tax environment here.
The property, right? Or the income or the sales?
Well, I think you can look at all of them. I mean, you can't just tease out one without looking at the whole picture. But our overall tax climate, you know, is too high. It makes it difficult to make investments here if you're a small or mid-sized business. We need to improve it. But my point is, we're never going to be the low-cost place in the country or the world.
I don't think we want to be Mississippi.
We just need to be better than we are today, and then we need to be really focused on what we can be good at.
All right, we're out of time, so we're going to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you, Ian.
And Saul Kaplan, head of the Business Innovation Factory, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.